Life Audio.
Hey, welcome to the Happy Ramp Podcast. I am Ted Cluck, joined as always in studio by my good friends, my partners in radio, Barnabas Piper and Ron Martin. Boys, we've got a laser specific thing to talk about vis-a-vis pastors and travel and social media. Really fired up to talk about that.
Then it's a shame we don't have anybody in the show who knows anything about those.
Yeah, that's true. We don't have any experts on that whatsoever in the program. But then we got some breaking news, boys, on the back half of the episode. That's what we call a teaser in the business. So you're going to want to stay tuned for that and the pastor thing, which we'll get into right after this quick break.
Hi, everyone. If you've been injured in an accident that was not your fault, listen up. We have legal professionals standing by to answer your questions for free. Call now and find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth. Call 800-497-4410. I'm here with spokesman John Wolf. So, John, tell everyone listening who should call right now.
Well, Maria, first off, thank you for having me here. It's always nice to answer the listeners' questions. Now, as far as who should call in, anyone who's been injured in an accident and think you deserve compensation, give us a call right now. 800-497-4410. You'll find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth.
Thanks, John. You heard it, folks. Take advantage of this opportunity and call now. 800-497-4410.
Advertisement sponsored by Legal Help Center may not be available in all states.
All right, boys, we're back. Did a little texting together last week as a program, as a company. Ronald dropped something very interesting into the group chat. It was a pet peeve of his. It has to do with pastors. It has to do with their behavior on social media when they're traveling and when things don't go well in their travel. So maybe set us up on this. Kind of talk us through, you know, what happened? What got you all kind of in a ladder?
Yeah,
over
no.
This?
So I think it's more, I'm just kind of surprised. So there's been a trend over the last couple of years, and I get this. There's a general trend on social. I'm mainly talking about Twitter, where you're a little peeved. You're a little bothered by the treatment or the service that you've gotten from a particular, like, you know, company, organization. And you kind of get on Twitter and you kind of do the, hey, Wendy's, you know, the last three times I've ordered that, you know, chocolate milkshake, you know, I've gotten back to my house and there's a vanilla milkshake in the bag, you know, and there's like, so there's just like, so it's a little bit of like this, I'm exaggerating with that one, but like that gives you an example of like, okay, like I get this, I get that maybe they're trying to be funny or maybe they're just trying to like alert, you know, the parent company to see what kind of benefit they can get from saying that. So I feel like it started out with things like that. And then it made this weird turn into like United Airlines, where it seems like every pastor, conference speaker, ministry leader, like sort of in our ilk or our tribe, it seems like at some point they have like the total age of outrage, breakdown, meltdown. Hey, I've been sitting, you know, my bags have been lost for 4 days. My flight has been canceled 6 times. I've been waiting in this terminal, you know, for like 97 hours. What are you going to do about it? And it's just, it's this total breakdown, meltdown thing. And I'm like, wait a minute. Like, and I'm always like, you know, and again, you know, to make some qualifiers, you're like, dude, I totally get that. I've been in the middle of that. Like we all have. It's the worst. But there's a part of me that just goes, wait a minute, like, dude, you can't do that. You're not allowed to get all outraged like that on social media. Like, you're supposed to be the dude that's calm and patient. And if you do want to reach out to United, that's cool. I get it. Maybe this is the way you get their attention. But it can't be just total freak out, flip out. Like, you gotta like, there needs to be some composure. And you got to play it cool and you got to be kind and you got to be nice and blah, blah, blah. And so what I've seen is just this total, like, I don't know, like it's okay because it's an airline to do the total flip and freak. And I'm just totally baffled by that. And I'm just on the outs. I don't get it.
Interesting. Well, it it presupposes a few things that aren't true. It presupposes that, like, anyone in the Twitter audience cares who they are or where they're going. It's kind of this strange, like, hey, at United, I wrote a book with Moody Publishing 7 years ago that sold 1,200 copies. Like, I deserve better than this. I paid a whole $93 for this ticket. How dare you make me sit on the tarmac for 30 minutes? You know, it's a real kind of ego thing, you know? And I think to your point, baby, it's the kind of ego thing that you are wise to keep hidden. You know what I mean? Because we all have those impulses and we all have those feelings, but it's like, don't say it. You know, you don't say it out loud and let the whole world know kind of what an a-hole you actually are inside. It's strange. Pipe, your thoughts.
I think it's funny that he mentioned United Airlines, because my experience is if you say anything negative about any airline, somebody will reply and go, yeah, that one's the worst. So apparently they're all the worst. United is the worst. Southwest is the worst.
Air travel.
Yeah, air travel, the worst. I think it's fascinating how this came about, because I think some of it's ego. I think some of it is being trained by sort of the public review thing, you know, Yelp, yes, or Google, mm-hmm, reviews or TripAdvisor, wherever you leave your reviews, yeah, where a negative review will often benefit you. Yeah. You know, because business owners, especially small business owners, I don't think airlines care at all, but
yeah,
small business owners will reach out to you if you've left a negative review. What can we do to make your experience better? So sorry you went through this, blah, 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 blah. And so you can leverage that if you're so inclined. And so I think we've been trained to respond that way. What gets me is when it's not just a direct, like, you know, a direct tweet to, you know, United Airlines customer service or whatever saying, hey, our flight was canceled for no reason. Please advise how this can be rectified, which is, you know, that's kind of a reasonable request. But instead, it's like live tweeting their frustration.
That's what I'm talking about. Yeah.
Been on the tarmac for 45 minutes. Now it's an hour and a half. They're not even serving drinks. They won't let us get off the plane. And I'm like, now I'm miserable. Like, why do I have to be miserable? Because you got stuck on it. I'm definitely going to have my turn. I have had my turn many times. But the flip side of this is I know the temptation when you're sitting there on an airplane and you're just sort of steaming literally and figuratively because they don't have the AC on. You feel powerless because you are.
Yeah.
And you think, like, the thumbs go to the phone.
Yeah.
And I have stopped myself on probably half a dozen occasions. And I think there's probably been times I haven't. I'm sure if I went back through my Twitter history, I could find some times I complained about brands or whatever. And so in that case, it feels more just like, it feels more like an adult temper tantrum. It's like, no one's paying attention to me, so I'm just going to sort of digitally kick and scream and see if somebody will give me attention and pick me up and fix this thing. But it really does. And it looks about as dumb as a temper tantrum when you're on the outside looking in.
No, that's good, Pipe. I think that's what gets me. And again, it's not to say that I've never did. So I feel like I got to qualify up the nose about this. Like, it's not like I've never done this. It's not like I'm not frustrated. It's not like me and the airlines are just like super tight and we're buds and I love United. It's just this idea of like, it's a bad look. And if you're somebody who's like, you know, even in the vicinity of what we do, the three of us all do, it's like, it's a bad look. It's this inability to play it cool, to sort of exhibit, like, I don't even some moderate, like, Christian conduct over this stuff. And I know what category this is putting me in even saying it. So I'm real kind of nervous right now because I get upset and I lose my patience, all that stuff. But I feel like, man, when you're doing it on a platform like that, where you got all these people, like, kind of like in real time getting to witness this and getting to experience this, like you said it, now I'm miserable, right? And so you've given everybody else the occasion to like become upset or to grieve their, you know, air their grievances or and then this is what's crazy too. So here's the next level to it. this is what always surprises me, is then you get the people that jump on and go, I know, right? You know, and then they're just, then you brought them into, so like everybody's nightmaring together, right? It's like the nightmare party, you know?
Well, yeah, I have two things on this that I want to hear you guys on. I realize Matthew 18 wasn't written, you know, in the context of people's interactions with airlines, right? But there is something like kind of like I'm skipping all the steps and I'm jumping right to like, you know, hanging somebody out to dry. I'm going right to like kneecapping somebody. I'm not even going to speak with Delta, like personally, you know, I'm just going for it. So there's that, but like, okay. And this one's more conceptual. We're now 20, 25 years into the conference circuit and pastoral travel. And we're probably 15 years into that being a public thing. Like, you cannot take a trip without letting people know that it's happening, right? Like, if you get on a plane and go somewhere and you don't tell your entire social media following, did it Correct. Even happen? You know, so we got like 15 years of data on that, and we got like 20, 25 years on, all right, we're doing it, conference circuit, everybody's going everywhere. Is it about to be over? I mean, because pastors now for two decades have been suffering, their words, through just the burden of like airline travel. Are we about to be done? I mean, are pastors going to get together and just kind of say to one another, you know what, it's easier to like not fly all over to each other.
I mean, in the famous words of Karen Carpenter, we've only just begun, is what I think, you know.
Yeah. Now, why do you say that? Because we've also got 2.5 decades of data on like getting booked to speak somewhere is the best part of the whole process. You know, like you get booked, you're kind of excited. Oh, I get to go to Phoenix or wherever. But then you do it and it's kind of a lot of work and it's tiring. And so, you know, all the things. I mean, why do you say it's only just begun, baby? Like, is it going to slow down? Is it going to get more like intense?
Well, I don't know. You know, gosh, I don't have stats, right? So all this is just, these are just hot takes. But yeah, I think, yeah. You know, I think the conference circuit has cooled off a little bit, but I do think that, but people are writing more books than ever, and it's easier than ever right now because of social to, if you like a book that somebody has written, it's easier than ever to reach out to them, get a hold of them, get them out to some event you're doing. So I think it seems like you just see a lot more of that, like churches doing like mini, you know, seminars and like micro conferences. It seems like those things are just all over the place. And it's super easy to say, you know, to get like a B, a C, a D list guy like one of us and just say, hey, I like what you wrote there. Why don't you come out and speak on it for an hour? What we're going to do, an event on a Friday night at our church. And so I think that's just all over.
Huh. Pipe, is it going away? Is it going to slow down? Where are you at?
Oh, I don't think it's going to slow down. I think the shape just changes. I do think that the glamour wears off. And uh-huh. I think there's a lot more people doing a lot more kind of low-key travel without the complaining than we are aware of. You know, sort of you only hear the squeaky wheels, not the ones that work the way they're supposed to. And so, you know, I think about somebody, I mean, I can think of two or three pastor friends who are part of different networks, or they're doing a lot of international ministry partnership. The only people they ever reach out to are like those who they are friends with and say, hey, I'm headed to, I don't know, Bucharest to meet with a group of pastors and encourage them. Would you pray for me? You know, and it's not like, or if there's a travel complaint, it's a text going, hey, my flight's delayed. I don't know if I'm going to make it in time. would you pray that a connection comes up? Which is seems entirely appropriate to me. And yeah. So, but yeah, I don't think the travel thing is because the world is shrinking. I mean, no offense to Jared C. Wilson. And by no offense, I mean, I'm bitterly jealous of this thing that he gets to do. He goes to Australia like once or twice a year for ministry partnerships and has for like 10 years. And you know, so he just has this network of ministry relationships, and he goes over there, and because international travel is easier and the world is smaller and the internet has made us aware of people who are doing good ministry in another part of the globe. And so I think travel increases. Hopefully that also means people just get used to the fact that travel sucks. And so they quit whining about it. Like when I go to the airport, I fully expect things to not go well.
Yeah. It's not like it's been promising this amazing experience, you know?
Yeah. Like, I mean, it's a little bit like a family holiday gathering in that when, you know, you get back home afterwards and people are like, how was it? And if you can say uneventful, yeah, that's a success.
That's the
you
ceiling.
Did it, guys. Yeah, well yeah. done. Uneventful and got out of there on time.
Yeah, no, you're right. Yeah, and it's been a good couple of decades since the airline business has even remotely promised anything pleasant. Like you watch those ads from, I don't know, like the 70s or 80s for like a American Airlines or whatever, and it looks like all glamorous and people are in suits, and now it's like most people are in pajamas, you know, and it's just disgusting, you know.
When I was in high school and college, I took a couple trips to visit friends or to go home for holidays on Greyhound or Megabus because yeah. that's what I could afford, you know. So it's, yeah. it's like a $29 ticket one way or whatever.
Yeah,
every airline is just Megabus in the skies now. I mean,
100%.
It smells like it. It people yeah. dress the same. It's. Yeah. I mean, there is no more glamorous business travel. You are just Megabusing in the air.
Yeah, well said, boys. Let's take a break. Then we're going to come back and break some news. We'll be right back. All right, boys, we're back. Let's cue up the breaking news jingle because we have a live show to announce, and it's not just any live show, boys. This is the last live show that we will ever do, and it's the last show that we'll ever do because we're closing the show down after a decade. So September, Soma Church in Indianapolis, which has been my favorite venue to date. Really like it there. That's going to be the site of our last show. And our last live show. And if you want to, if you've never gotten to a live show and it's a thing that you've wanted to do, this is the one. So Pipe, give us some details on dates. You're going to drop in a little ad read with ticket prices and the URL for the ticket website after we get all that live. So by the time the show drops, they'll have a website they can go to get tickets. So when is this thing happening?
Yeah, so it'll be September 24th. I believe that's a Sunday evening. So it's the Sunday evening just before the Gospel Coalition Conference in Indianapolis. So we basically come for us and stay for the after party, which is all the stuff that they're doing. It'll be at Soma Church in Indianapolis, the Soma Church Midtown location. Again, all of this we'll get all these details. I'm going to do a little detail drop in just a few minutes, and it'll start at 7 p.m. go until 10 p.m. or until the party ends, or until they kick us out. And we'll have a couple different ticket tier prices. So one will include kind of a VIP special with t-shirt and, you know, a unique show t-shirt that our good friend Josh Byers from Visual Theology is designing. And then the other just standard tickets. And yeah, it's going to be basically a big send off for us as a kind of a ride into the sunset show. So in some way it'll be formatted like we've done previous shows. And in other ways, I think we're going to do some kind of special unique stuff to really put a cap on what has been I would say a pretty stellar, almost 10-year run of podcasting. All right, listeners, as promised a moment ago, here are the details on how to get your tickets for our last ever live show. Again, Sunday, September 24th, 7 p.m., Soma Church Midtown, just outside Indianapolis, not far from the Gospel Coalition Conference. The website is thehappyrant.com, and you will hit the live show tab. It'll be obvious. It'll be prominent. You can't miss it. We have two ticket tiers. We have a $35 ticket tier, which includes your ticket. It includes some free swag and then obviously access to the giveaways by our sponsors.
and any refreshments that we have there, which should be pretty good. Can't promise sheet cake this time around, but it might be there. We shall see. Then we have a $50 VIP tier. That is all of the same stuff. So ticket, swag, refreshments, giveaways, and then a custom t-shirt for this event designed and made by Josh Byers of Visual Theology. Josh does awesome work. He does all of our swag. He does our website. Also does not deal in cheap gear. So these are comfortable t-shirts. You will like this shirt. So that's the $50 tier. You can find all of that at thehappyrant.com. Hit the live show. It's all there. We are really looking forward to this. It's going to be a blast. It's going to be different than our previous shows, probably more energetic, hopefully the biggest crowd yet. We can't wait to see you there. It will be fun. There will be laughter. I can't guarantee there won't be tears, and it will be a great send-off. See you in September.
Yeah, that's unbelievable that it's been 10 years. Hey, I have a question about the logistics of things like this and this thing in particular. Do you think it's better to get them on the front end of Gospel Coalition? They're all excited. They've just been on their very glamorous plane flight, and you know, they're kind of charged up. It's like the first day of camp, you know. Better to get them then, or better to get them after their, you know, third day of sitting through boring sermons that they could have listened to online and are the same as last year's boring sermons? And then we get to be the funny sort of like closer. Which do you think is better?
I defer to Ronnie as the one who these days is probably around more conferences. Ronnie, what are your thoughts on the rhythm of a live event coinciding with conference?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think I think definitely front loading is the way to go. I mean, the energy is there, yeah. The enthusiasm is there. Nobody's tired. Everybody's still really excited for the conference. I would hate to think what would happen if we tried to do this either post TGC or in the middle of it when everybody's kind of making plans, yeah. And all of a sudden we become like the plan that gets kind of pushed to the side. And I think we've done it right. So I think we're still on point for this one, kind of being how you get to kick off your conference experience.
Yeah, I agree.
I think it fits our brand as well, in the sense that we were actually offered an opportunity to do sort of a, like, they do like sponsored late night events, and to do one of those, except that we need autonomy. You know, I'm not sure we could fit very well in the strictures of a Gospel Coalition, nor do we want to pay money to do this event.
So I was going to ask you about the parameters of the deal. So they were like, hey, Happy Rant, we'll let you pay us to do an event. That was how it was going to work.
The way they pitched it was, would your publisher like to pay for you to do an event? To which I, on behalf of Harvest House and Moody Publishers, and who I don't even know who all we've published with, the Good Book Company and B&H and so forth, I said, no, probably not. If we could get a fifth of the cost from each of them, maybe, but that seems like a lot of work. So we'll just do our own thing.
Yeah. It's like when the waitress in Tommy Boy is like, let me check. Yep. It's closed. You know, there was no way any of the publishers were going to offer that. So what kind of a venue would we have been in?
I'm assuming like a side room at a convention center. You know, they have those meeting rooms, you know, they name them all sorts of cool things, you know, like the, you know, the Palm Room D, right, or whatever. Uh-huh. Or like a hotel conference room, ballroom, you know, all of which have so much character in them.
Oh yeah. Just vibrant places. You know,
yeah. I mean, you guys have done speaking before in like hotel meeting room ballrooms, right? Like, is there any place that just sucks the energy out of a gathering like a hotel meeting room?
No, and yeah, it's weird. There's always like a couple of like lonely water bottles on a table and like a bag of chips and some granola bars and I don't know. It just feels real sad. And I don't know what it is about like hotel ballroom, conference room kind of settings, but I think there's something psychologically about it where people kind of feel like they can filter in and out whenever they want. you know? So like, you'll be talking and like four guys will walk in and they're kind of like mid conversation, or somebody will leave. And it's just like, here's what it feels like.
It's because you're downstairs from their bedroom. So they're like, exactly. I'm going to go catch a nap.
Yeah. I'm going to go flop down on the
bed.
Well,
especially for what like we're doing too. I mean, we like, it just, that would, that, just that whole setting for us would not work on any level. You know, if you're just giving a 40-minute talk, yeah, it's like, sure, you know, but like, right, we just depend on so much energy, interaction. And I think that would just destroy it, you know?
It would. It's the like speaking equivalent of like, you know how you go to a coffee shop and like there's some like hipster girl like playing the guitar and singing, but like nobody's watching her, you know, nobody's paying attention. Everybody's just talking, getting their coffees. That's what it feels like to be in a speaker in a hotel conference.
Except behind a lectern that says Embassy Suites, so all the photos of the event look like you're a mid-level marketing manager.
Exactly. Exactly. Which is maybe what we're the podcast equivalent of.
At this point, you know?
So Soma Midtown, is it your guys' favorite venue as well? Or am I alone in that?
I'm trying to think. We've done a handful of these. I think it is because it has a it's just the right size. So like it,
yeah.
If there are 50 people in the room, it doesn't feel undersized. I think the last time we did it there was also in conjunction with the Gospel Coalition, and I think it might have been our biggest one ever. I want to say we had over 100 people there.
That one felt awesome.
It felt awesome. Really good. It doesn't feel like when we're on stage that we're super far removed. So, you know, people ask questions, you can actually like look them in the eye and have a conversation. And, and then, you know, stepping down to mingle with people between episodes and stuff is very accessible. Yeah. My recollection is they had a kind of an awesome little tiny green room as well, like a little side stage with a bunch of like old school musical instruments and stuff in there. So
I think you guys might be confusing it a little bit with Sojourn New Albany, which is what we did last time, which I thought was really great. We had a great turnout for that. Remember, Josh was with us. That was really good for me. I like Soma too, but I really love Sojourn New Albany. I thought that was really fun last year.
I remember that. That one had like a better sort of lobby setup. I think the green room there was the one with the big weird paintings on the wall, right?
That was the nursing mother's room.
Yeah.
Yeah. Comfy chairs, though. You know.
the nursing moms always get the best furniture. That's the way it is at our church, too. Like everywhere in the church is like crummy church furniture. And then there's this one hidden room with like big leather couches and recliners and stuff. And I'm like, oh, this is real nice. So,
dude, if you're going to be a Reformed church, you better have a huge nursing mother's like facility. You know what I mean? And in fact, they should probably just swap it with the sanctuary, you know, like just do church in the little room and move the couches into like the big hall, you know. I think that'd probably be a more efficient use of the space. Go ahead,
I feel like we kind of buried the lead a little bit with this one, which is, I mean, you said it and I said it, but I feel like listeners who have been with us for a long time might be going, wait, did I hear that right? That this is in fact the last live show we will do. Also the last show we will do, you know, barring a band comeback in a few years. But this is legitimately the until next time sign off event of the Happy Rant.
Yeah.
And so that's why we're giving it so much airspace now. But also I wouldn't want listeners to miss out on that fact because it's, you know, it feels significant to us. Maybe it doesn't to them.
No, that's a good word, Pipe. And I'm glad you brought it back up. Is there any sense of, as you guys think about that, like, oh, it's gonna be weird. You know, it's gonna be weird to not do this. Or do you think it's the kind of thing that'll just kind of recede into the you know background of your life rather quickly? Thoughts on that?
I think it'll be weirder the following Wednesday morning when we don't record.
That is true. Yeah. Yeah.
Just because the weekly rhythm is, you know, we have had, I mean, even if we've been somewhat spasmodic with our scheduling, like we have been pretty consistently weekly for a decade. And so that departure, the live events always feel they're kind of pinnacle and then come down because there's, you know, there's a lot goes into them, a lot of energy, a lot of fun, but like they're one-off things.
Yeah.
But I, which is kind of nice because I do feel like that that's the appropriate way to land this. You know, like if we just recorded an episode from our respective homes in, you know, three different cities, it would feel super lame and anticlimactic.
Yeah, just click leave meeting at the end, you know. Right. Well, that's that. Yeah.
Big gulps, yeah, huh? See you later.
Baby, do you ever think about, I don't know, I've never sort of been a fan of this show. I mean, I'm a fan of it in that I know that sounded wrong. Like, I'm a fan of it in that I do listen to it from time to time, and my wife loves listening, and like most of our friends listen, but I've never had that experience of, I'm trying to think as a fan how I would feel if a podcast I really liked like ceased to exist. And I don't think I've had that experience. Have you had that, baby, where like a podcast that you listen to has like gone away? And if so, what were the kind of emotional ramifications?
Yeah, I mean, I haven't, because I don't really listen to podcasts. I mean, I'm real spotty with that. I probably listen to like, honestly, probably under, you know, 10 podcasts, random podcasts a year, you know, but it's nothing I follow. It's just like my wife will be like, hey, I heard this thing, I want you to check it out. And I'll be like, all right, you know, I check it out. Yeah. So there's been no like fandom with me in terms of podcasts. I mean, I guess it's the only equivalent is like when your favorite band breaks up, right? And they've made their last record, they've played their last show, and you just go, oh man, I'm so bummed, because I just, you know, I'm always anticipating what they're going to be doing next and whether they're going to come through town and I can see them. I think this feels a little bit different than that to me in some ways. Only because, you know, like, gosh, man, like the archives are pretty, pretty massive here. People can go back.
They are.
And if you're somebody that just dropped in a year ago, I mean, you can go back pretty far and get a lot of, I would say you could get a lot of product that has not progressed that much, you know? So if you're like, no, I like later period Rant as opposed to early period Rant, it's like, you know, I mean, it was probably a little more edgy in the beginning. It was probably a little more funny, a little snarkier. We've mellowed out with age a little bit over the last decade, but it's largely the same program. So, you know, it's all there.
Yeah.
It's all there for the clicking, I think.
Yeah. I guess I'm kind of just trying to like evaluate how much it'll mean to people, you know, or how much it even
should. It's a great question. You know, it's a great question. Yeah. I can't.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've never.
I do know this.
You just said something real quick, T. I have never. Yeah, I literally have never clicked on an episode of The Happy Rant. I've never listened to it. So.
Now that's remarkable. Because I have. And I actually enjoy it. Like, if we've had like a really stellar conversation and I know that it was really good and, you know, I'll listen to like my wife, I'll hear my wife enjoying it from like the kitchen or whatever. And I'll listen from time to time and re-enjoy the conversation. But,
it doesn't at all. No, it doesn't at all. I think that's perfectly acceptable. Yeah. I hate the sound of my voice so much that if I listen to any, so I've only ever listened to one sermon I've ever preached. It was like in the top first five sermons ever preached, like whatever, all these years ago. And I've never listened to another sermon since then.
Did you say that the top five worst sermons you've ever preached? Because usually those go hand in hand.
First five
sermons. It was one of the first five.
And it was so depressing. And whenever I hear myself play back, I get so bummed out that at one point, you know, decades ago, I was like, I just never listen to anything played back that's spoken. So that's it. That's it for me. I'm out on
all right.
that. You know?
So let's take the third ad break. And then I've got a couple questions on that. We'll be right back. All right. So two questions for you, baby. One related to podcast listening in general and one related to your voice in specific. So when you're by yourself and you're driving around, you're not listening to podcasts. Are you listening to music? Are you like a total silence guy? Or are you just like maniacally like calling people on your phone and filling the dead air that way with like conversation? What's your kind of driving by myself?
It's either going to be, Music or silence. Yeah.
Music or silence. Okay. Interesting. Do you have a particular type of driving music that you go to, or just whatever you're listening to in real life?
Yeah, it doesn't have any rhyme or reason. It'll just, you know, yeah, it'll just be something I click on. Mm-hmm. But a lot of times it'll just be, most of the time I'm driving with big amps. So because I live in a small town, there's, you know, when we're, it'll just be when we're kind of driving out and getting out of Dodge. So most of the time we'll have something on in the background, and then we'll just be having a conversation. So it's mainly just talking. Yeah.
Sure. Sure. So regarding your voice and listening to it, are we to infer then that you don't enjoy listening to your own music?
Yeah, either? I don't listen to it. Yeah. I mean, I listen to it when I have to. So like when you're recording it, you have to listen to it so much back, and you know,
once you get sick of it during the process.
Yeah, I don't revisit it once it's done. But that's just me. Yeah. I mean, it's not a statement. It's just me, you know.
Do you think that's more or less common in the industry? Like would I'm trying to think of I don't know, a band that, like, do you think Journey listens to their own music? You know what I mean? Like, it's really listenable. The guy's got a great voice, it's ubiquitous, you know, like if you're Journey, you know, if you're Steve Perry, are you listening to your own music?
I
mean,
I don't know how to, it's a weird question to answer because the creation process is like, you hear it so much that when it's done, it's done. It's like, do you read your own books? And like, I don't do that either because I'm done. I'm over it. You know what I mean? I'm constantly looking towards the next thing. Yeah. The creative process is you don't look back, you look forward. And so once something's done, it's like you put a cap on it and it's almost like it becomes a museum piece for me. It's like under glass and that's it. You're done. You're good. And
do you feel like we actually have a creative process on this show? Like, does that even apply?
I mean, I do. No. I mean, I think I that has to go wide, right? I think we do have a process. I think it's probably a little more subliminal, but I think there's a process for sure. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. This to me exists in a different category than making a record or writing a book, you know, and I do read my own books. Like, I don't read them like it's sitting by my bedside and I'm like dog-earing the pages at night and stuff. I don't read them in that way, but like I will read them, you know, and primarily because like my book on the 1987 NFL player strike was the book that I always wished existed about that. And I got to write it because it was really interesting to me. So from time to time, I'll, you know, flip it open and read a chapter or a couple pages or whatever. Pipe, do you like interact with your own books after they're done?
No. I mean, only in the sense of the opportunities that come out of it. So, you know, you'll write a book and then they'll be like, hey, can you read the audio book? And then I have to go back and reread the whole thing. And I enjoyed producing the audio book. It feels like a whole different, you know, it's a whole different product.
Yeah.
I don't enjoy reading my own writing from the perspective of, I always run across stuff that I go, man, I wish I had worded that differently. Mm-hmm. You know, usually not message stuff. I don't wish I had written a different concept, but
yeah,
that was poorly written.
Where was my editor?
Enjoy that part.
Right.
Well, and just the reality of that the written word and the spoken word are not the same. You know, so when people are like, write like you speak, I'm like, then you'll write dumb. Don't do that. But also reading that out loud is awkward. So that it's a weird kind of interaction. And then, you know, people will say, you know, once you write a book, you'll get invited to come speak on things. Mm-hmm. So then I'll have to revisit the books to go, okay, what did I say? And what can I pull out of this to kind of be an outline so that I don't have to, you know, recreate this whole thing. But I don't reread them for the sake of kind of, definitely not enjoyment or kind of personal benefit. It's all sort of in a, you know, let's call it research or additional product creation kind of.
But I mean, like music is even worse because if you're going out, like, and you're playing that music, like every, you know, you're going out on tour, whatever, so when you finish that record, that is not the last time you're going to hear your work. You're going to be playing those songs. There comes a point where you're like, oh man.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. And that would almost be akin to, like, if there was a really amazing Happy Rant episode and everybody agreed that it was amazing. And if we could somehow like take that on tour and perform the same episode every night, we would be so sick of you know, talking about, I don't know, what pastor would be a pro wrestler or whatever. Like, we'd never want to do it
like
again.
Hey, Harrison Ford, when's the last time you saw, like, Empire Strikes Back? He'd probably look at you and go, what? You know?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
It would feel a lot like stand-up comedy where... Mm-hmm. You know, because what we do on this show is, you know, you sort of riff and occasionally we come up with something that's really funny or maybe insightful or something.
Yeah.
And if we put together our best 40-minute set.
Yeah.
And then had to do it repeatedly. At some point you go, how this is, I marvel that a stand-up comic can tell the same jokes over and over again and keep making them
funny.
Well,
and that's why they're,
yeah. Because at some point they kind of lose their life.
Always like, yeah. Especially in that industry, those guys are constantly writing new material too. So they even like, they can't even tolerate that. They can only tolerate that for so long, you know?
Yeah.
But like the big guys who tour a special, you know, so like, you know, Nate Bargatze comes out with a special and then he goes and packs out arenas all over the place. It's the same stuff over and over and over again. And he continues to tell the same stories. He continues to be funny. That would be like, it would have some of that same feel to it. I think if we either did the same thing over and over again or re-listened to it or anything like that. And I mean, the whole premise of this show for 10 years has maybe 7 years kind of post El Trogi has been, we don't show prep. Mm-hmm. We have some ideas and we see where it goes. And sometimes it's magic and sometimes it's Wednesday. It does feel really different than anything else we've talked about, which is super prepared and curated.
Prepared, paid for up front, right? When you do a book, when you do a record, somebody's like got some financial skin in the game. Whereas this is all speculative, right? And I don't know. I think our level of show prep or lack thereof was kind of in keeping with the casualness of the medium, you know, like from year one to year three, like nobody even knew if this was going to work, you know, nobody knew if podcasts were going to be around in a decade or if anybody would care about ours or whatever.
And to this day, we don't really have a measurement for what work is, you know, like,
correct.
Because this isn't our living.
Yeah.
This isn't a ministry outlet that we're measuring and going, you know, kind of what is the fruit of this?
Yeah.
And so to say, does this work is kind of like, I don't mean, we can look at numbers and go, we've had a really good run. We're maintaining that level of success. We hear some good feedback. You know, Ted, you forwarded an email a week or two ago with a really kind comment. I got a written letter from a widow in the Northeast who said when her husband was alive and was, you know, in his final kind of months and years, they would listen to this together and it would make them laugh. And now that he's gone, she listens and she said, it's kind of like a thing that she can still kind of share those memories. And so I hear stuff like that and I'm like, I'm literally sitting here in sweatpants and like bedhead doing this show. And somehow it encourages a woman in the Northeast United States and stuff like that. And I'm like, I don't know what to make of that.
Yeah,
I guess that's success, but that's not what we were aiming for. I don't know if we were aiming for anything other than fun.
Right. That is a great story, that's awesome. By the way.
That's real. Like it was a handwritten letter that was mailed to me at the church because that's the address people can find. And it blew me away.
Dude, we should just put that lady's name on the free ticket list for Indy Live. And I don't know where she is in the country, but if she wants to pull up, she can do so for free. That's a sweet story.
Oh, absolutely.
And probably a good note to end on. I like going out on that one for today. And yeah, to your point, Pipe, like I've met people who say things like, my parents listened to this when I was a little kid and now I'm in college and I listen. And that's kind of cool, you know.
Oh, that is, and boy, are we old.
I know it. Yeah, it makes me feel about a million years old, but it also makes me feel good. And to your point about it working, I realize I said, you know, I was going to end on that note, but I thought of something else that was kind of interesting. Like with all forms of media, I feel like there's a honeymoon period, and then there's the period where you realize advertising on it really doesn't work. And I think we're in that now. You know, like there was like a 3-year run where everybody was throwing money at podcasts. Like, oh, you have a podcast? I'll pay you $500 a month to talk about my new book or my whatever. And I don't know. I feel like we're out of the financial honeymoon period with podcasting, which means it's probably a pretty decent time for us to get out of it. So,
yeah, I mean, I was listening to an interview with an author who has written for a bunch of websites, and every major website has run into the same thing, you know, like sports websites where you just, the pie is sliced too thin. For it to be financially successful, there's too many options. But I will say, you know, I think back to the beginning of this show. So pre Ronnie, but then even during Ronnie's first few years here, you know, cause Ronnie, you came in what, 2 years into the show, yeah. Something like that.
Yeah. Something like that.
Yeah. And, you know, so maybe the first 5 years of this show total, we didn't make any money. Yeah. And we didn't, like, it didn't really cross our minds for the first couple years that, like, maybe this could make money. So we definitely were doing it just because there was a niche that we wanted to fill of let's be lighthearted or a kind of in this reformed Christian world.
Yeah.
And that's not a thing that existed. And it still kind of isn't.
Right.
You know, we still kind of hold down a niche that other people aren't doing. So in that sense, it's worked.
No, I think it has worked. Yeah. And in the pantheon of podcasts, it's made more money than most. And you know, I mean, it's been up and down. It's been a journey, but you know, I think it's been successful. I think it's done well. Boys, this episode has been successful. 43 minutes of pastoral travel, announcing our last show, and until next time.
We want to take a moment to thank the team at Life Audio for partnering with us on this podcast. Be sure to go to lifeaudio.com and take a look at the other podcasts in their network. They've got shows about prayer, Bible study, parenting, and more.
Want to learn more about God and His will for your life one verse at a time? I'm Quinice Petway, co-host of the Your Daily Bible Verse podcast. I'm inviting you to tune in and subscribe at lifeaudio.com.